Hello, welcome, and thanks for listening to Carbon Climates, an energy podcast dedicated to discussing all things energy, carbon, and sustainability. We also point out what's getting hot, aside from our planet. I'm your host, Enya, and today I'm joined with my Carbon Climate and co-host, Peter, who is an NDA, an OCDA, and a DEA energy assessor, and we'll be discussing all of these terms within this episode. So before we get on to today's topic, Peter, how's your week been?
It's been going pretty well. It's only Tuesday, nothing too strange starting so far. But I'm sure something will happen later on in the week. But apart from that, everything is good with me. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I think this is my ninth or tenth episode. I don't know if anyone's asked me.
There we go.
That's pretty good. Thank you very much.
I mean, you're nearly on the double digits now.
Nearly on the double digits.
Yeah,
I think I've just uploaded the sixth episode. So, it's going pretty well. It's going pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Like it. But yeah, no, I'm going well. You know yourself. It's very, very busy with work.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to keep your head above the water. But no, brilliant. Thanks very much for that, Peter. So can you tell us your job title?
Yes, so I am a sustainability engineer at VPP Energy. Started actually only a couple of months ago there, back in January. Just kind of learn the ropes and how everything operates. But yeah, I think it's going well so far. I'm enjoying it.
Best few months of your life.
Oh, unbelievable. Can't get enough of it, you know.
Of course. That's really great to hear. So, Peter, how long have you been in this sector?
Yeah, so I suppose I really started in the sector when I was just after I turned 18 now. So around about 7 years. Now, it hasn't been a full-time 7 years. It's been really in part-time, going from a few jobs during the last few years. But in the background, I've also had my WeWork going on, so I've just been doing a lot of those energy assessments in the background kind of thing. So that's where I've really been keeping up, and my focus has gone there kind of a thing over the last few years. Yeah, but it's definitely a good wee sector to be involved in.
That's great to hear. And you used to be at an housing association, didn't you?
Yes. So I was an energy officer at a housing association there for a year. So I learned a few interesting things, just mainly to do with obviously your domestic properties and the kind of scope that the social housing has to deal with. You know, there's a lot of people, a lot of properties, and then a lot of people as well too. It's just kind of tackling those any areas of concern that might come up.
Very good. And you're a sustainability engineer. But then you're also qualified, as I was saying at the start, an NDAA, OCDA, and DEA.
Yeah.
And I know you kind of do. So I've talked about in the podcast where I assess construction projects, but you're able to assess existing properties.
Yes.
And make recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
On how to improve their energy efficiency.
So the DEA, Domestic Energy Assessor, so got qualified for that myself around COVID time there.
Right.
We kind of done a few jobs for a few people, and then just kind of kept building on that there. And one thing that always came up was obviously there in certain aspects of letting out properties, they have to meet certain standards. Part of my role was helping landlords meeting those standards for as cheap as possible, to be honest with you. You know, it's all comes down to money at the end of the day.
I would be the same if it was a focus in my eyes.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say that. No, I want to. Not that I have a house. Like, this is purely fear. Yeah, when I get a house, I'm going to hopefully make it as energy efficient as possible.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. And can I ask you, see at school, did you ever envisage yourself in this sector?
No, definitely not. Basically, how I came to be involved in this sector was a teacher of mine. He had a friend who owned a consultancy himself, and he was looking for a kind of a placement student thing over the summer. And so I ended up just getting involved with those guys. And just kept at it basically for the next summer years. And don't think there's any sign of it slowing down yet. So keeping on, you know.
Never look back. Okay, well, that brings us on to today's episode topic, which is about retrofitting, because Peter, you've had experience making recommendations.
Yes, yeah.
To retrofit, and we're going to explain a bit about what retrofitting is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to say the episode title. So the episode title is Let's Go Retrofitting. Yeah. And I thought that was best thing in the world.
Yeah. Very funny.
It's kind of sit there because I knew I wanted to have you on, and then it just came to me. This is it. This is how we do it. Okay. So in construction, retrofitting is where new features and technologies are added to old and historical buildings. Buildings can be retrofitted for various reasons, such as to make them more energy efficient, as we just talked about, or improve their climate resilience. This is directly copied from SARS. So examples of retrofitting can be doors can be draft-proof, and this will also reduce their air leakage.
Mm-hmm.
Windows can be upgraded to double glazing or triple glazing, and also draft-proof.
Yeah.
Roofs can have additional insulation added, or also check out their ventilation. I know one of my friends, but the mechanical engineer upstairs, he is telling me about how he got his roof. He got the positive input ventilation.
Yes, yeah, PIV systems, yeah.
And he said it really helped.
Yeah.
Floors can also be installed with insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And then walls and their surfaces can be cladded or fitted with cavity wall or external wall insulation.
Yes, yeah.
And then lights can be optimized. There can be heating upgrades. Or renewable energy systems can be installed, like solar panels. On the site I was looking at also get like solar panels or wind energy. And on the EPC or on the EPC software, there is an option for turbines.
I think more rural areas, yes, probably. Yeah, you probably get that around Belfast, that he said there.
So unfortunately I've never had to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully soon. Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that general explanation, listeners. And Peter, of course, you already knew this, being in the sector 7 years. Okay. Did you know, according to citychanger.org, that retrofitting helps improve the energy efficiency ratings, which has been proven to rise the valuation of one's home? And also the average price hike for this can be considerable, and there's research showing that it's up the price valuation by about £24,000.
That's a good comment. Especially if you have a house that you've maybe been living in for 15 years and maybe you're in the next 10, 20, or you're going to sell it, it's definitely worthwhile to make some investments, energy wise. Especially when people are looking at the EPC rating, that really does help. And it actually helps a lot of banks as well, too, for mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
Really helps, get your evaluation for effectively getting your house for what it's worth, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something people should look out for and maybe pay a bit more attention to. Is EPC values of even, potential homes that are going to be purchased and stuff like that.
I think that is coming more into play now.
Yes.
See, back in the day, when I first started out, you could tell the EPCs or the SAP calculations that you get off the same software,
mm-hmm.
they're more just a checkbox.
Yeah.
Okay, the solicitor says we need to have this.
Yeah.
Give me this. But now you can tell clients are becoming more aware or more here, this actually is important.
Yeah.
And it's not even the clients I've had dealings with, like you said, the bank,
uh-huh.
and they're like, give me the EPC ratings of this,
yes. because
we want to calculate their
uh-huh.
EPC. And this is the thing with the flex of when you're talking about EPC, there's a lot of different names
mm-hmm.
for it called EPC or SAP rating
yeah.
or asset rating.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so it's interesting, the terminology.
Yeah, that's being used as well. And I actually just got informed there last week that a lot of English banks as well too, they're actually not willing to lend on a property that's less than a D.
Right.
So I think you could have, landlords, maybe you're looking to remortgage or buy more houses, that, these banks are going to come to them and mm-hmm. go, we're not going to be able to lend against that because of the rating, which is a probably like a direct reflection on the actual price itself kind of thing. Like that's where they're taking that from is, you know, if that's a D, that's going to be an all right house. But if that's your E, it's not going to be great. You know, we're going to have to put money into that. And then that's going to have a knock-on effect on us kind of thing.
Yeah, brilliant. And also, I have one more tidbit for you, one main point. Did you know homes with solar panels are more likely to sell for more than their asking price? Apologies, I thought I was going to have more detail there. But like, but yeah, apparently solar panels make the home more attractive.
I just see that potential of, you know, having free energy really appeals to some people, especially we don't get many sunny days, that's not the woods like, but you know, those days they are there. Everybody has a wash machine on, and
yeah,
it's just making the most of them.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks, Peter. Thanks for your insight into the.
Anytime.
So, as we talked about, you're a domestic energy assessor. Could you describe the exact process you go through when you survey a building for an EPC?
Yes. So basically, I would walk in, arrive at the property first, and I would look at the elevations. So it would be your front and your side and your rear. And then obviously you have your mid terrace. So it would just be the front and the rear. And then go and take my measurements. So the measurements are used for working out the floor area and the heat loss perimeter. And then I would start to look at what is happening inside the house. You know, what boiler is it? Is it radiators or underfloor heating? Are there TRVs on the radiators? If there are radiators, your heating controls, you know, are the programmers? And then I'll be looking at stuff like the window thickness, insulation thickness, in the loft, how many habitable rooms there are as well too. And then I suppose another aspect that would be looking at the actual, you know, date of the building. So you kind of, after you've done a few of them, you kind of get the clued in on, you know, the age of the brickwork, and you can kind of guess, you know, okay, I know that was 1970s, or I know that's going to be solid brick because of the, you know, the bricks are a different way, which would be, you know, around the early 1900s would have been built and stuff like that there. So after a while, you kind of just get used to it. You know exactly what you're looking for. And then when you go in as well too, you kind of know off the top of your head if this house is going to be good or bad. But sometimes, you know, you could easily see, like, for example, I've gone into houses where it's no oil boiler with a water tank, and there's no insulation around the water tank. And, you know, there's just a big copper vessel storing your water, and it's losing, you know, heat like, you know, tomorrow, like, you know. So three recommendations that really, really help a property for realistically under 100 quid, like, you know.
That's,
you get your say if I go into a house and there's no LED light bulbs and there's no you know, insulation on the water tank, 30 quid for your insulation around the water tank, and maybe up to, you know, 60 to 90 quid for your light bulbs kind of a thing. And you're actually already up a couple of points for people, you know.
And it improves, like this is the thing that, and like, it's probably, you've probably seen it, but the difference between assessment between non-domestic and domestic, like domestic, I think, like non-domestic, it's really great, it's really detailed, I can get a lot of information from. But domestic, like, I'd be really focused on it because it affects people. It affects your home. Like,
it's, you're coming home to either a warm house or a cold house, and, you know, it's like you putting the heating on for 2 or 3 hours, and then as soon as you switch that heating off, how long is that house staying warm for? Is it going to be 20 minutes? You're freezing again, or are you going to switch it off, and you might have 2 or 3 hours of nice warm heat. And similarly with your hot water as well too.
And one of the things when you're talking, like, I don't think people. Like, people should be entitled, or people should know that they have a right to feel comfortable.
Exactly. And you think about it as well, too. The biggest bill most people are paying every month is their mortgage.
Yeah.
So a lot of their money is going into this house, and you could be going, you know, it can be ridiculous sometimes as well, too. You know, people really are not looking. It's almost like, I describe it, like, you know, an MOT for your house.
Yeah.
Almost kind of a thing, you know, you get your oil changed in your car every, you know, 6 months in a run, better over time. Same thing with EPC. Make sure you're checking up and your insulation and your light bulbs and, you know, your heating controls. Because I know for a lot of people, they would just stick the heating on all day. They wouldn't really know how to work it.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's one thing I actually came across quite a bit in the social housing aspect. You know, people would just come in or wake up in the morning, switch it on, and it'd be on from 9 o'clock until 10 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And then knocking it off, and they're spending, you know, fortune on it.
Yeah.
But if you have a reasonable program that suits you good, so say if you, you know, if you're up at 9, have it on from 8 until 10.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, have it, you know, put it back on from 6 to 10 at night, kind of a thing. Yeah. You know, it's, you have to really start and look at your actual heating control and program to suit you best, because everything's going to be different as well too.
Yeah. No, you're just right. You're just right. I think my granny was in her house, like, but she was like, she was the worst for it. She, you come in, it was roasted.
Yeah.
And then she'd be like, have to order oil.
Yeah. Like, you know? No wonder. Like, yeah. Switching it on for 9 hours.
You know, when you said about the MOT, or you said about changing oil for your car, reminds me I need to do my car. Oh, that's brilliant, Peter. Yeah. Thank you so much for your thoughts on that. So can I ask, like, so again, we're talking about your qualifications, your OCDA, your NDA, your DEA, you've got an alphabet after your name. And can you tell us about the training you went through to obtain those?
Yeah, so the OCDA, on construction domestic energy assessor, that was done through Amherst. It was a course, basically. If I remember correctly, I think you just did a few assessments in-house with the Amherst, you know, coordinator or whatever. And then you're basically, after a couple of days, you were given your, you know, accreditation that was you sent on your merry way. And then you know, I suppose a lot of it is, it's all well and good, you have a training, 2-day training course, and now you're, you know, an accredited assessor. But it's really about building up that, you know, that experience of doing houses and different house types and apartments and, you know, different heating systems and all that there. Then with the domestic energy assessor, so the EPCs, that was done online over a 3-day course.
Right, okay.
So there's two... There's two minds when it comes to the training. You know, you have the one where you pay for the classroom course, slightly longer, but you come out with your accreditation at the end. Now, me personally, I haven't done it, so I can't really speak on it too much, but people would say, oh, don't be doing the online course, you're not learning anything. But I disagree with that. It's, you know, you're still getting that walkthrough of your EPC software. But we were given a portfolio. So you basically, you did 2 with the trainers, and you did 3 by yourself. And I think doing the 3 by yourself with effectively no one helping you is a wee bit better, because it's more real world. You know, effectively, you have to set up appointments to go to this person's house, serve it, do it all yourself. And then obviously you're given feedback and whether you need a change. And whereas, you know, if you were doing it in this classroom environment, it's everybody's going out to the same house, everybody's doing it the same. It's almost, you know, like a sense of security goes right out. Just, you know, if I don't know what's happening, I'll just ask them. They'll be able to tell me. But if, you know, if it's done online by yourself, you've only yourself to blame, kind of a thing, you know, and you can learn from mistakes and stuff like that. And then similarly to the non-domestic energy assessor course, it was pretty much the same process as domestic. But yeah, the non-domestic is just a different kettle of fish, like, when it comes to detail and stuff like that.
No, I remember you said there about like building up experience, but I remember, I think I was here a year, so kind of like they was like assessing a year before I did any actual qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to do the qualifications, I'm like, brilliant, I know everything.
Yeah.
But see, looking back now, I'm like, oh my goodness, yeah. No. I didn't know everything.
Yeah.
And it's only after the experience you build up over time.
Exactly. You're like, see, like, it's all well and good you go into a house and survey it, but when you have the tenant there sitting breathing on your neck asking a million questions and why does this not work, or even landlord coming back and why I need a 39, but even though it might be a 36, so you might be going here.
Yeah.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. When you hang on, that's not how this works, unfortunately, you know, putting out of the job.
Brilliant. Would you have any tips for, like, any guides to read up on for, say, anyone who wants to become an energy assessor?
Suppose a lot of the Amherst stuff is really, really informative. Like, I think Amherst is probably the gold standard when it comes to, you know, energy assessments as a couple of the UK.
I should tag them in this.
Yeah. Give me a shout out here. Yeah. Am I going to be cut or something like that? So, you know, just any of their technical guides, be, you know, a good read up. And then, you know, there's a lot of retrofit assessor stuff, similarly as well too. Yeah, but if I was going for one of them, it would be Amherst kind of thing.
Amherst, you know? Yeah. There's also, in general, for energy assessment, there's the SAP 2012 or SAP 10 manual.
Yes.
These are all free manuals, yeah, from the BRE website, so they can be accessed. I'll post links to them. Yeah. But yeah. Okay, brilliant. Okay, well, Peter, mm-hmm, we're coming up to a section in which it's a new section I tailor towards each guest in the episode. Okay. So it's called the, it's actually, it's the same as the title. It's called Let's Go Retro Fitting Section. I think when people see the episode title, they'll be like, wow, that's groundbreaking. Okay. Can you tell me when the first EPC was done in the UK?
Yeah. I was going to say probably, I think, 2009, but I have a feeling it might be a wee bit before then.
You know what? 2009 is actually, I think, when the first EPC was done for Northern Ireland here. Oh, okay. 2008 or 2009.
Yes.
I looked it up on the co-pilot that they know was able to tell me.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so 1st of August 2007 is when they were first introduced into England and Wales.
Oh, okay.
And they were introduced due to the requirements of the EU Directive of Energy Performance of Buildings,
mm-hmm,
and were part of your Home Energy Pack, very hit, which was, and apparently this was the thing before EPCs, this was the Home Energy Pack, or Home, sorry, not the Home Energy Pack, my bad, the Home Information Pack.
Oh.
And this was supplied by people who were selling the properties, mm-hmm, with four bedrooms or more. And little fact that the home information pack, it's no longer required. It's just the EPC.
It's EPC, no? So kind of, okay, ISO. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. Same, you come on this
every
podcast.
Day's learning to,
every day's learning day, okay? Second question. Do you know how many buildings the NI Energy Strategy stated it needs to retrofit each year in order to meet their outline targets of carbon reduction on buildings?
Oh, I have no clue, but I'll throw a guess of, this is each year, not in total of.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, no, actually it does give a number. I was going to be like, oh, it gives me a percentage, but no, hold on, it gives me a number.
So each year, I'm going to say at least 15,000.
You know what? You're close, okay? It's 50,000.
Oh. We know.
Yes, it is estimated that 70% of buildings in use in 2010 will still exist in 2050.
Mm-hmm.
So we may need to retrofit approximately 50,000 buildings each year, around 3 times the current level we're at now. So this,
mm-hmm,
yeah, like,
it's a big task to
be really increased focus,
yeah, on
the likes of retrofitting. The minimum energy efficiency standards state what EPC rating is required in order to let out a building. Can you tell me that rating?
I think I can't now. Is it a 39E?
No, you know what? You went really in detail that you get the number. It is an E. It is
there
an
you
e.
go.
But yes, so April 2020 saw further implementation of the minimum energy efficiency standards, mm-hmm, in England and Wales. And I think something applied to Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I think we're almost so far behind.
We either encompass it or we don't encompass it. Yeah. Like, you know, it's annoying.
Yeah.
And I think April 2020, did we have an executive then? I don't know. We probably didn't. But yes, so April 2020 saw the implementation of the energy efficiency standards. This makes it illegal for private landlords to rent out any properties which have an EPC written worse than an E. And you must have an EPC if you rent out or sell the premises. It's a building under construction, which is about to be finished, and you've changed a number of parts to the building on separate occasions. So it involves upgrading the heating, air conditioning or ventilation or changing the actual structure, mm-hmm. which is kind of falls under retrofitting. Yeah. Like, what is, yeah. Okay. Can, so like, if you don't have it, so if any of the stuff happens, you like any of the following criteria, like you rent or sell, building under construction, or you change effects heating, which will affect the energy of the EPC written.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me how much you'll be fined if you don't have one?
If you don't have one? Yeah. Oh, I'm going to say $20,000.
Close. It's actually between 500 and 5,000.
Oh, yeah. Do that.
But yes, it's based on the rentable value of the building.
Oh, okay.
So if you don't make an EPC available to any prospective buyer or tenant.
Okay.
But yeah, well, thanks for playing the Let's Go Retro section.
Hopefully you did well.
But yes, okay, so the NI Energy Strategy wants to deliver energy savings of 25% from buildings and industry by 2030 and ensure all new buildings are net zero ready by 2026 and 2027 or earlier if practical. As an experienced energy assessor, the existing housing stock and an OCDA, do you think this is possible?
So the question is basically, are they on track for getting 25% of these houses up to standard?
Like, in your opinion, do you think they would be on track?
No. No chance. Like, no, I think there's not enough attention. Put the words tonight, it's definitely getting, you know, more and more people are getting interested and talking about it. Like, but I think we're way off. Like, 2030, which is only what, six years.
Oh, don't say that. Like,
I know. So no, I think there's definitely no. I don't think personally. No, I don't think it would be.
You know what? You're exactly right. I've got the kind of same opinion. I see a lot of people talking about it.
Yeah,
like, raising awareness, which is amazing. But my where's the action?
Yeah, where's the action? Yeah.
What I hate is even, well, that's the problem I see now, and I've talked about this in, I think in the first episode, was about the energy assessment software and the software methodology.
Yeah.
Northern Ireland were under SAP 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that is a software, as you can guess, which came out in 2009.
That's 15 years later.
15 years ago. Now we've got, like, you know, they've told us, like, oh, make a percentage reduction, but we're still using a 15-year-old software.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it's actually a software that's considered a security risk. Like, yes, they only have it on one computer in the check-in
uh-huh.
QA office. But, like, the fact we've got that, like, we can't even assess them properly.
Yeah.
It's like, so even when, like, someone goes in, makes a change, they're like, oh, how did that help my building?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh yeah, you went up 2 points. You're like,
yeah,
what's the point? Like, I'm not gonna make the,
I spend that much money for what, 2 points? Like,
yeah, exactly. So it's annoying, and yeah, it is annoying. But one of the things that was used to address this, they said, oh yeah, Northern Ireland, we're gonna go under the new energy assessment methodology in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
SAP 10. But that's in 2025. And I'm like, so
next year.
So that's another year. So
yeah.
So then you've only got 5 years to meet the 2030 targets if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's definitely gonna be a big jump. You know, that's SAP 10 is quite, it's only came out there last year.
Yeah.
So there's basically gonna be 14 years difference.
Yeah.
From so what's that gonna have cost wise for architects, builders,
exactly,
XYZ, it's going to be quite a shock to the system. Yeah. I think,
and my kind of thing is that you've got energy assessors out there, you've got existing energy assessors, you're employed by estate agents, they go around, they assess houses, okay, and they're used to the methodology,
mm-hmm.
but then they're going to have to get used to this, and they've been in Northern Ireland, they've been using SAP 2009 for the last 15 years, they've got used to that software. And then when SAP 10 comes out, they're like, hold on, what is this?
Yeah, like, yeah, trying to kick up a fuss kind of a thing, yeah.
And I've asked this in a consultation. I didn't ask about SAP, but I asked about the one to bring in, you know, the overheating criteria.
Yes, yeah.
They want to bring that into Northern Ireland.
Mm.
And I'm like, so I asked them, is there going to be any training involved?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Are you going to like appeal to local energy assessors?
Yeah.
Because.
It's like a government funded kind of a training scenario. Like, yeah.
Because a lot of the overheating assessment that would take place would be done over in England or Scotland or Wales, but like Northern Ireland, there is no requirement to do anything. And it's like.
So why would people get qualified for something that's not going to affect them? Yeah.
Exactly. And then so that's going to be another criteria that just comes in and shocks people. Yeah. And then they're going to be like, wait, I have to chalk out all this money to like get trained in this. And it's annoying because they're implementing these really great measures. They're being like, yeah, we're going to do this. And like, that's really great, but you don't have the tools to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Apologies, I just kind of went off on a tangent.
Out of form of tangent.
But that's great. No, I'm glad we're in agreement with that question. Peter, thank you so much for coming on.
It's been really great
to have.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, of course. So just before we go, do you have any advice for future prospective engineers, modelers, or energy assessors looking to get into this sector?
My advice would be get in it. Get as much experience as you can from people around you. Do as many courses as you can. Try to get as many letters after your name as you can. But this is a sector that's realistically it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
It's only getting bigger and bigger. And I don't know about you, I've been hearing even on the radio and emails, adverts on TV, let's switch and save. How much are you saving on your energy bills? Do the X, Y, Z. And so energy's coming in hard here. Yeah. And I think it's one of these sectors just going to keep growing and growing. And, you know, really, it's only been really big the last, 20, 30 years?
Yeah,
maybe?
I would say that, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So imagine, 20, 30 years. But, in the future, what's this going to be?
Yeah.
So I think there's plenty of money to be made in it. And, it is interesting work. And the thing about it is no two projects are the same, realistically. You know, there's many different types of buildings and different types of heating systems. And, it is an interesting sector. It's one that's going to be on the up. So, get in it.
Thanks very much, Peter. My kind of advice would be, I usually have something prepared and it's usually pun-based, but I'd be like, join the fun. Just join the madness.
Join the madness.
But no, thanks for coming on, Pete, and you'll definitely be back on.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for listening to Carbon Climates. If you follow us on Instagram at @carbon_climates, you can keep up to date with all our latest news and information on episode uploads. Okay, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.